Hello and welcome to episode 654 of the podcast devoted to the classic and sometimes not so classic genre cinema of yesteryear. This is Monster Kid Radio, and I am your writer, host, and producer, Derek M. Cook. The music you're hearing right now is the song La Telaraña. It's from the band The I-5. They are a surf band based out of Eugene, Oregon. This comes from their EP Creature Crawl, which you can find at theI5.bandcamp.com. And that's I as an eyeball, 5 spelled out, .bandcamp.com. I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes over at monsterkidradio.net where you're going to find everything else you need to know about the podcast when you're done listening to this episode, of course. Or check it out while you're listening. I'm not the boss. You do what you want. Anyway, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here, and I'm excited. I am so excited for so many different reasons. One, I really like this band. You're going to hear the song in its entirety at the end of the episode. Two, I get to podcast with my wife again this week. And three, we are talking about Doctor Who, which is brand new to me. Y'all know that as much as I'm a fan of old school media, science fiction, fantasy, television, all of that, I just don't have any Doctor Who in me. I have very, very, very little experience with the Good Doctor or all of the Whovian fandom. Beth is a fan, and she held my hand and introduced me to Doctor Who, and we started at the very, very beginning, old school, 1963, black and white, William Hartnell, Doctor Who. We actually talk about the very first story arc, the first four episodes of Doctor Who in this week's episode of the podcast. You're going to hear about her experience with Doctor Who, my experience with Doctor Who. You're going to find out what her favorite Doctor Who episode is of all time. And we're just going to talk in general about, well, all things Who. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to sharing the conversation with you. I had fun having the conversation and editing the conversation. I think y'all are going to dig it. There are going to be some minor spoilers, but we do give you a spoiler warning. Plus, check out the show notes at the website. I've got a time code set up now that'll let you know what's happening where in the episode. So if you want to follow along until you get to the spoiler warning and you want to hold off until you get spoilers, you can just skip ahead to the end. Whatever. No big deal. Of course, that's not the only thing we've got this week. We've got Kenny's look at Famous Monsters of Filmland and Mark Matzke's beta capsule review. Also, I want to talk a little bit about what's coming up with the Mail Order Zombie Journal. I want to make sure that it's clear what we're going to be doing, because I have received some emails from some people, including somebody that I've never heard from before, and I'm really excited because I plan to have him on the show as a guest down the line, questioning some of the things that we have in mind. Not in a bad way, just wanting to know more. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Mail Order Zombie Journal towards the end of the show, so stay tuned for that as well. Why am I in zombie mode? Because Dawn of the Dead is playing in the theaters as part of its 45th anniversary, and Sunday, April 14th, Monster Kid Radio is going to crash the Hollywood Theater for their screening of Dawn of the Dead. It's happening in the afternoon. We're talking about the original Dawn of the Dead. I have a Facebook event page set up for that, so if you are a Facebook user, just follow me on Facebook and you'll see the posts leading you to the event page. I'd love to meet you there. I'd love to chat it up with you. I'd love to hang out with everybody as we talk about one of my absolute favorite zombie movies, and then actually watch one of my favorite zombie movies. I'm going to put a pin on this. We're going to talk zombies at the end of the show, because I can't not talk about zombies anymore these days, apparently. But we can't get to any of that until we get to the segments and everything else. So, here we go.
Hello, darling.
Hello.
It began just as you see here.
Do you know what you have just done? You have transferred us in time and space, and I hadn't even set the controls. Now I don't know where we are. We could be anywhere in the universe and at any time.
Yes, this is how it began. The adventure that started by accident, taking us out of this time and place to a lost planet.
Who's there? Who's there?
Come with us into that strange new world. I cannot guarantee your safety, but I can promise you unimagined thrills.
Move you make, we can see. we got here?
An alarm bell. They know we've escaped. They're cutting through the door.
Come with us to the petrified forest. Meet the Thals, the blonde giants who have survived the monstrous rule of the Daleks.
We must get to the city.
They could have scanners here, anything. I'm going back.
No, you're not.
We'll be killed. We'll never defeat the Daleks.
Remember, we are watching you. We can destroy you.
It's a trap. Go back. Run.
These are the people trapped by the Daleks. Doctor Who, the brilliant science professor. The young man who triggered off this strange journey. The professor's frightened granddaughter. And the youngster who inherited her grandfather's adventurous spirit. Doctor Who and the Daleks. Now you can see them in color on the big screen, closer than ever before. So close, you can feel their fire. So thrilling, you must be there.
Abra, look behind you! Stop the countdown! The bomb will destroy the planet!
Live from the Land of Light in Nebula M78, home of the mighty Ultra Heroes, it's Monster Kid Radio's Beta Capsule Review. Return of Ultraman, Episode 47, The Marked Woman. Original air date, March 3rd, 1972. An unexplained disturbance causes Minami and Go to bail out of their MAT Arrow seconds before it hits the ocean. To make matters worse, Oka had accidentally switched off radio contact with the patrol, making it impossible for them to communicate their emergency message. Another similar incident results in Oka receiving a 30-day leave of absence, which Captain Ibuki kindly describes as a vacation. Reduced to three, Kishida, Ueno, and the captain are the only ones left to respond when a fire-breathing monster attacks an oil refinery. In the wake of the attack, Oka stumbles home, barely conscious, and her mother remarks that she smells like oil. Meanwhile, Go and Minami swim to shore just in time to witness Kaiju Femigan setting another refinery ablaze. Racing to the scene, Go transforms into Ultraman just in time to save Ueno, whose MAT Arrow was going down in flames. Ultraman chases Femigan underwater, since the monster is headed in the direction of MAT headquarters. But how could Femigan have known that location? The Marked Woman is an unusual entry in the series, offering a story that's undoubtedly suspenseful, but which also seems patched together and unsure of its own tone. On one hand, there's potential for a very serious theme here, that of a working woman mishandling her responsibilities in a mostly male world, and it seems like the script is headed in that direction. The monster's name is Femigan, after all, but it arrives at an explanation for Oka's behavior that viewers never witness and is exposited in one line of dialogue. On the other hand, there's overt slapstick comedy, specifically a running gag in which various icky sea creatures keep ending up in Go's flight suit. And then there are a handful of sequences reminiscent of the most avant-garde moments of Ultra 7, which are visually attractive but seem out of step with the rest of the episode. It's a crazy quilt, held together with the thread of monster attack teams' unwavering support for one another. And while the story may not exactly line up, The refinery scenes and underwater battle indicate that there was plenty of creative ingenuity left in the tank. For Monster Kid Radio's Beta Capsule Review, this is Mark Matsky reporting.
I reached out to Mark to update the Follow Mark Matsky Online section of the show notes, and he gave me some links, and we're going to kind of clean that section up. But he also was asking me about Ultraman Arc, which is the new series that's coming up, and what I thought of it. And, well, I mean, it's not out yet, but we can see the trailer, and I like that we're kind of going a little backward in terms of the look and the vibe. I think I said to him I like the vintage feel, but it doesn't really feel vintage. It feels a little more retro, though. I really like the current Ultraman series, or the most recent one, but, you know, I like that we get to go back and forth and kind of dip around the Ultraman mythos a little bit in terms of vibe and feeling, and I'm really, really looking forward to the new Ultraman. I think that's coming out, later this year, I believe. I can't remember the exact date, but, you know, I'm going to be watching. Are you going to be watching? You should be watching.
Hello, I'm John Pertwee.
No, I'm not.
I'm Patrick Troughton, aren't I? Anyway, I am here at Grover's Mill, New Jersey, site of Orson Welles' immortal War of the Worlds. Aha! Did you see that? I'd like to remind you that NJN needs your $40 membership. I urge you to help support the network that brings you Doctor Who. Call 1-800-528-6600 right now. Too often, membership appeals are a war of the words. Public television interrupts your favorite program to solicit your membership. You yell at your TV, get off, get off! But not on NJN. The rest of 1986 is pledge-free, folks. Pledge-free Doctor Who. Well, that's logic even a Dalek could understand. NJN. Positively worth joining.
Hello there, Monster Kid Radio heads. This is Kenny with a look at Famous Monsters of Filmland. Today, we are talking about the British sci-fi TV show Doctor Who, which has the potential to be a long series, as we are only looking at a handful of the 800-plus episodes. So I'm going to keep this short, so we can stretch out FM's coverage over time. FM published two articles on the series, in FM 126 from July of 1976, and in 155 from July of 1979. Today, we are going to hear the first paragraph of the first article, entitled, The Fantastic Adventures of Doctor Who. Who will save the Earth from the lizard-like slime monsters, the Silurians? Who will melt the monstrous ice warriors? Who will lock the sea devils in Davy Jones' locker? Who will make an alien mind parasite mind its P's and Q's and choose a different site to sit in than people's brains? Who will test the mettle of the Iron Horde, the robotic mobile Daleks? And who will defy the ultimate in villains, the Master? Who is what the Doctor ordered, and Doctor Who is what the world gets? The medical marvel clad in an elegant red-lined black cloak, ruffled shirt, and string tie, he well may be the Dr. Welby of the creature set. Doctor Who has been running for 12 years on British TV and has additionally captivated 27 foreign countries. It was about time he turned his sights to the United States, and now, via PBS TV, he's creating an American following, which promises to be as vast in age bracket and as vociferous in popularity as at home in England. That is all for this week's look at Famous Monsters of Filmland. We will have more next time. For MKR, this is Kenny saying adios.
Kenny, oh man, you know, he and I did not coordinate this. I did not tell him that we were going to be spreading our Doctor Who coverage out over two episodes at least. Stay tuned for that. That is a spoiler. So that he just kind of gave us a taste of Doctor Who coverage in Famous Monsters of Filmland totally works because, well, keep listening and you'll find out why. Thank you, Kenny, for all the hard work that you do putting these segments together. I just really appreciate you, man.
Attention, all Daleks. Look for these special Doctor Who packs of Weetabix. Each one has one of these four Doctor Who action games, three of these stand-up figures, and a secret message from the Time Lords. We must capture these special packs of Weetabix and exterminate.
Collect the special Doctor Who Weetabix packs and enjoy your daily wheat while stocks last.
Exterminate!
From outer space, the famous TARDIS brings Time Lord Doctor Who and the amazing Leela, ready to do battle against their mighty enemies, the fearful Cybermen, the giant robot, and one of the deadly Daleks. Whilst Leela covers him, the Doctor reaches the TARDIS in time and disappears to escape from the Dalek. Doctor Who, Leela, the fearful inhabitants of outer space, and the TARDIS. From Dennis Fisher. Fantastic.
Have something you'd like to share with Monster Kid Radio? You can email the podcast at monsterkidradio@gmail.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail at 360-524-2484.
You're going to get us a copyright strike. We're going to get a copyright strike.
That's okay. I'm pretty sure I wasn't in tune. Hey, everybody, monster kids and monster grown-ups and monsters of all shapes and sizes.
Whovians, too. Whovians, yes. We are finally diving into some classic Doctor Who, which is something I wanted to do on the show for quite some time. And we're going to do a two-parter. We are going to talk about Doctor Who, not just this week, but next week as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to kick things off with the original, old school from 1963 Doctor Who. The very beginning, the first four episodes, the first serial.
That's right, with the very first Doctor, William Hartnell, mm-hmm. Who played the Doctor pretty much as long as he physically could.
I was doing a little bit of minor research. I didn't want to kind of spoil myself too much, so I didn't do a lot of research beforehand, but afterwards, after watching the first four episodes, did a little bit of digging, and yeah, apparently at one point they were going to cast somebody younger and put him in old age makeup, but ultimately they went with an older actor who just did it as long as he could. I liked him. I thought he was great, but I don't want to get too specific or granular yet, because I want to talk about Doctor Who just in general. Fill my hoo hole, baby.
Let's take you to Whoville.
Here we go.
So, this first episode aired at quite the turbulent time in the world, airing on November 23rd, 1963. Some of you may remember that that's the day after John F. Kennedy was assassinated here in the United States. And so a lot of crazy things going on in the world at that time, both here in the U.S. and overseas in the U.K. We had a lot of racial strife and inequality and things changing all around. I know over there from my experience, there was also a lot of financial inequality in the UK at that point in time. It was a big time of rebuilding finally after, you know, things getting back to quote unquote normal after both world wars, really, but especially the second one with all the bombing and everything. And so Verity Lambert, the original producer, and Anthony Coburn, the writer of these first few episodes, came up with this idea for, you know, a fantastic sci-fi show that could be a family show, nice short little episodes, about 25 minutes each.
My impression, and there were other people involved as well, but my impression is that, yeah, the BBC was looking for something a little more family-friendly. I know that as Doctor Who evolved and all that, and maybe that's a good place for me to start to talk about what I knew about Doctor Who beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Doctor Who as an action-adventure sci-fi show. It's something that the entire family can enjoy Star Trek-wise. Like, it feels like a Star Trek show to me. At least that's what I thought going into it. And I assumed that the original Doctor Who was going to be a little more kiddy, a little more kid-safe or kid-friendly. I knew what the TARDIS was. I knew what the Daleks were and the Cybermen. Everything I know about Doctor Who, though, comes from having watched the 1996 TV movie on Fox.
Ooh.
The two Peter Cushing films, which I know are not part of the canon, technically. And Lego Dimensions, the video game. There's a Doctor Who level. And at the time, Capaldi was the Doctor, but you could set it up to where you could rotate and play all the previous Doctor incarnations up through Capaldi. And that was a lot of fun. That's how I learned about the Cybermen and decided they were super cool.
The Cybermen are pretty cool. Wait till you meet Handles.
Spoilers. I know about the Angels. I know about the Regeneration.
You're referencing the Weeping Angels, of course.
Yep. I know about Regenerations. The Fox TV movie started with a Regeneration. I know about the Master, played by Eric Roberts in the Fox TV movie in 96.
Great character.
I know he's had a sonic screwdriver. I know he has companions. I know there's a canine dog at some point. I know there's a Torchwood spinoff and Sarah Jane Chronicles. Like, I know the basics, but I've never sat down to watch Doctor Who. I have very, very vague memory. Younger Derek flipping through channels and trying to watch some Doctor Who on PBS, I think.
Oh.
Maybe PBS. And that doctor was in a white suit, a younger guy, maybe blonde.
Okay. Peter Davidson, I think.
Yeah, I think that's who it was. And I remember thinking, Star Trek is better science fiction than this, so I stopped watching it.
Well, and depending on which doctor you're watching, which arc or even, you know, series, as they call their seasons over in the UK, each doctor has a very different personality, a personality of their own, obviously a face of their own, and their storylines can be very different too. In modern Who, which we'll get to eventually, they've really gone back to a lot of traveling through space and time and going to all kinds of different planets or time periods and things. But there was a portion of time, and this isn't really a huge spoiler, where Doctor Who basically was stuck, didn't have the TARDIS, couldn't travel. And so there are a couple seasons where he's on Earth solving problems. And if you hit on those, it may not have felt like the same sci-fi mad romp through space and time that you were both expecting and that most people would probably associate with Doctor Who. So there's all different kinds of things. There's definitely, even in the modern era, there was a brief period, I think a couple episodes, where he gets stuck on Earth. You mentioned the Weeping Angels. That's actually what's going on when the Weeping Angels show up. And yeah, there's so many great villains and monsters in Doctor Who. And yet, it does a really great job of showing us how oftentimes the monster is the humans. Or the monsters are the humans involved. It's not always the monster that is the monster, which I think many Monster Kid radio fans will appreciate and understand. You mentioned Torchwood and Sarah Jane Adventures. K-9 actually had his own show briefly, and Class is another spinoff.
Okay.
It was about a group of teenagers at this one particular school that seems to have an awful lot of Time Lord activity, if you get my drift. Amazing that school happens to be in Cardiff, where they film the show. But, you know, it really is a really fun show. It's great for, I'd say, for all ages. They really do try to keep it lower on, like, the gore. And the Doctor is usually really adamant, too, that although he does seek justice and he wants to make things right, he doesn't use guns. He doesn't use the traditional weapons, and he doesn't like to be pulled into human conflicts.
Now, I had watched a few episodes of Torchwood when it first came out.
Okay.
I haven't listened to any, but I've had a lot of people recommend the Big Finish audio dramas.
They're quite good and have a lot of the original actors in them. Yeah.
But like I said, in terms of actually watching him, I like the Peter Cushing films a lot. Okay. I mean, part of it's because it's Peter Cushing.
True.
And he's amazing. And it's Amicus Productions, and I love Amicus. I like the second one better than the first. The first one is definitely aimed at a much younger audience, but I really do like those movies. And I have talked about the second one, at least, on the show in the past with Casey Criswell from Bloody Good Horror and the 1951 Down Place podcast when we used to do that back in the day. When we used to do that Hammer Films podcast, we actually had a segment sent in by a contributor who would do Doctor Who connections. Because it's England, a lot of people that were in Doctor Who also did a Hammer work and so forth. So there's a lot of that as well. But again, my knowledge of Who overall, very limited. Just, I felt like I had so much homework to do to get into it, I never really gave it a shot.
I can see that. I was that way with like The Walking Dead for a long time. I felt so far behind that, you know, it felt almost impossible to catch up. So I get that, but you know, we'll get you there. So we talked about the Doctor. He is an alien.
Except they don't really say that in the first four episodes we watched. I think they were still trying to figure some of that out.
They hint at it.
That he's, and I even looked at you and kind of rolled my eyes, because there's a point where they're starting to call him by the last name of the granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if that's even his last name. He's Doctor Who.
I did appreciate that little dress. That was pretty funny.
There's the name.
So you have the Doctor.
Huh?
He's always got his TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he's lost it, which it does tend to do from time to time. For us, the TARDIS looks like a police box.
Right.
Now, did you catch in that first episode we watched, or might have been the second one, when they get to their destination and they come outside, did you catch what the Doctor said?
Yeah, that it was stuck.
He said it's still a police box.
Yeah.
So one of the things were non-Whovians, the TARDIS, which do you remember what it stands for?
Time and
Relative
dimensions of space.
Very good, very good. And in Doctor Who lore or canon, the Doctor's granddaughter, who we've met now.
Susan.
Susan, named it.
Okay, yeah.
And the TARDIS is not a one-of-a-kind vehicle. The people that the Time Lords, the Doctor comes from, the Time Lords, that they actually have quite a few of them. And all TARDISes have a special device in them that allows them to camouflage. So when they land somewhere, the idea is that the outside of it will automatically know how to camouflage itself. So if it's in a big rocky place, it might look like a big rock. If it's, you know, on a street of houses, maybe it looks like a house front or something. It can do whatever it wants. In this case, though, our TARDIS seems to have gotten stuck looking like an old-fashioned bright blue British police box. For those who don't know, like in the United States, they used to have these on corners. Think of it sort of like a payphone, but you can only call emergency from it. And it doesn't, you don't need to have a quarter, obviously.
Sure.
Police box being about the same size as a regular phone booth. And so you'd think, oh, that's a pretty tight fit. You know, we've already talked about the Doctor having friends with him or different companions. That is the technical term. But there's one special thing about the TARDIS.
Bigger on the inside.
It's bigger on the inside.
And I knew that, too, because I knew the joke. I knew that going in. And there are a couple of shots, though, where I did question that when the doors, because the doors open inward, and you see the other side of the door from the inside of the TARDIS. And it, to me, shouldn't that look like what the TARDIS looks like on the outside, unless there's like a holographic thing that's once it's inside? I don't know.
So I've actually, on this very episode, read differing opinions on this.
Okay.
There's one group of people who say that because the doors have swung inward, that camouflage, that it's a chameleon circuit, that's what it's called. The chameleon circuit has camouflaged them to match the rest of the room.
Okay.
Just while they're inside. Because you notice once we go outside, the doors look like phone box doors.
That's true. That's true.
So there's some people who say that it's the chameleon circuit. And then the other opinion, which I tend to go with, is this is the first episode. They hadn't fleshed out everything they were doing yet.
Sure.
And it just didn't occur to them to do that differently. In future series, you will see the doors still look like phone box doors when they're opened in.
Oh, that's disappointing, actually. I kind of like the chameleon circuit idea.
Okay, well, you know.
Yeah.
Keeping in mind, the Doctor walked out of the TARDIS, then noticed it was still a phone box. That may be the point at which the chameleon circuit broke.
Okay,
You remember from the episode, there was some fiddling with knobs and levers by companions that didn't really know what they were doing yet because they were brand new to the TARDIS. And so part of that theory of the chameleon circuit is that that's the point where it was broken upon landing. And so the doors worked when they were opened in because it was already set. But once they went out, the chameleon circuit couldn't keep doing that. And so in future, it doesn't really matter.
But what I like about that, though, is, and I'm going to keep bringing up allusions to other classic shows, it's very Star Trek in that we can't afford to keep changing the TARDIS shape, so we're going to come up with something. And budget-wise, this works. Let's make it work story-wise. Well, okay, it just got stuck. Boom. It's like we can't land the Enterprise every episode and we want to get somebody down on a planet. So they have transporters. Yeah, let's make up transporters. And then they justify in the story and all that. So I appreciate those touches that we are embracing our budgetary limitations and covering them, draping them with story.
You know, you bring up, that's a really good point, and you bring up the similarities with Star Trek. And I actually have found many ways in which they are similar. Obviously, they're sci-fi shows. They try to be family friendly with the content and make it not just okay for kids to watch, but something that parents would enjoy watching with them. The idea was that it would be a show that everyone in the family could watch together, from grandma and grandpa all the way down school age kids, without a problem. Both have amazing female producers, which at the time was just kind of unheard of. You know, obviously my personal heroine, Lucille Ball.
Very involved in Star Trek
and Desilu Productions, very involved in Star Trek. And then Verity, who we already discussed over with Doctor Who, really making the push. And in both cases, these female producers, they did a fantastic job of just taking that tiny, tiny budget and making the most of it by using every prop, costume, wig, you know, every single thing possible in the show so that they weren't having to build and recreate or spend money on new stuff. I know there's a scene in one of the Doctor Who episodes that we just watched where they're supposed to be like hiking through a forest or walking through a forest. There are points when you can, if you look closely, tell that you are both on a soundstage inside and that the forest is basically just every fake plant from the prop department, from the plant room at, you know, the studio in Cardiff. And so you get a very wide mix of different plants that probably would not all grow in the same forest. Well, everything from a palm tree in the back corner to ferns to, you know, roses, you name it, it's there.
You made a comment. You actually made a joke. We were watching it and made a joke about the extremely tight shot. Because we only had so many plants and props to fill the frame. If they had pulled back to a medium shot or something, it would be exposed, which felt very Dark Shadows to me, actually, the original Dark Shadows show.
Yeah, yeah. Similar era again.
Similar era. And I know Dark Shadows, everybody talks about Barnabas and all that, which is great. But I really like the pre-Barnabas Dark Shadows, too. When it was in black and white, and there were other things going on other than a vampire and his love story. And the production value felt very similar to me as well. So in a lot of ways, Doctor Who felt very comfortable and familiar to me in that I've seen Dark Shadows. I've seen Star Trek. I've seen a lot of media from the 60s. I've seen a lot of BBC productions and that sort of thing. And maybe I just wasn't ready for it back in the day when I was flipping through channels and saw this guy in a white suit running around doing something. I had a really good time diving in. And like I said, it felt very familiar to me at this point.
Okay, so at this point, we are going to get into some spoilers with the episode. So if you've never watched the first few episodes or any episodes of Doctor Who and you don't want us to spoil anything for you, pause right now and go do that viewing, and then you can come back to this.
Before you do that, though, I do want to comment on how difficult it was for us to get our hands on this. Disney has a deal now, and I don't know all the deal details. They're going to be doing new Doctor Who. I don't know if they're bringing all the original Who over, but right now it looks like Tubi has Classic Who on it.
Okay.
But last I checked, it's all out of order and it's all a mix. And it doesn't help that Tubi is an American company and the BBC did things in series as opposed to seasons, and serials were part of their lexicon as well, which is not what we do here. It's season this, episode whatever. So what I had to do is when we were watching it is I had to pull up a list of the episode titles and reorder them so that we could watch all of An Unearthly Child together, episodes one through four. Even though I screwed up at first and we watched episode three first. So I guess we're diving in right into in media res. I guess the first two episodes are the so-called lost episodes. No, I just had everything numbered wrong.
Yeah, it had been about 20 years since I'd seen the first episode. And so you started it and I was like, this doesn't feel right. So I was glad that we figured it out. But, you know, I will say I do think it's worth the effort. Like, yeah. If you're someone that loves the classic 60s sci-fi shows and stuff, it will be worth your time and effort. If you're not as big on that, if you're someone that doesn't understand the beauty of, say, Star Trek, the original series, and is more of just a TNG and on person, you could definitely pick up with what we call New Who, starting in 2005 with Chris Eccleston, and probably be just fine with that. But for our real true devoted monster kids who love that old school TV style of filming and presentation, I do recommend that you go back and at least get yourself a good taste of Classic Who so that you have that foundation for the things that will come later. When they did do the reboot in 2005, they kept everything's still canon from before. That's kind of. I mean, each doctor really does have their own personality. And while they have some memories from the past doctors, they don't always have everything right at their fingertips for recall. And just like us can choose to selectively forget things that are traumatic. So it's definitely a different feel.
Sure.
When you get to that point. But I would say for our classic monster kids, at least do yourself the service of going back and watching some Classic Who before you dig into to New Who.
And start with this one, because this is the first story, An Unearthly Child, which we are going to talk about now. So go watch it on Tubi. Come back if you haven't watched it yet. Spoiler alert. So the first four episodes are the only episodes written by Anthony Coburn, one of the original writers on the project. He was an Australian that moved over to England and or Britain and did some work there. He did write a second serial, but they ended up not using it, and he ended up leaving the production, the TV show altogether after that. I don't know much about him other than he came from Australia and he did have a career after Doctor Who as well. So I don't know how much of what became the lore of Who comes from him versus the producers or other showrunners, but we get it all here. We get Doctor Who, we get the companion, we get the TARDIS. I didn't realize the TARDIS hung out in a junkyard. That was new to me.
It can. I mean,
it can go anywhere, really,
I guess.
You think
of it looking like kind of an old-fashioned beat-up police box.
Yeah, which made me think, too, and you brought up the time in the world, what we were dealing with at the time. I would assume that by the 60s, most of the UK had been cleaned up from World War II.
Yeah.
But I know World War II did a number on a lot of the UK.
Uh-huh.
And it took several years to rebuild a lot from being bombed and that sort of thing. So seeing the TARDIS in the junkyard with all the trash around, I immediately started thinking of other films set post-World War II in the UK. That sort of thing. We have an actual home address. I was kind of surprised that we have his home address, something on Totter's Lane. Why that hasn't been exploited and turned into merch, I don't know. But I think that's kind of cool. I'm going to do something with that at some point, I think.
Well, that's at least the address of the junkyard.
Yeah.
We have a young girl. What would you say, high school age?
Yeah, she's in high school.
High school age. And you have two teachers who are, she's in class dismisses. And then you have two of her teachers discussing her and how she's a bit well, odd.
She's a bit odd. She does really well. She did really well in her grades, but just recently started having issues, like mistaking the metric system for the decimal system and things like
that. Yeah, some things she's brilliant in and other things she seems to know nothing about, like not knowing how currency in the UK worked.
Which, you know, gets the teachers interested. They start asking questions and Susan gets very defensive about what's going on at home, which these days would be a call to social services.
Right.
But instead, these teachers decide to just follow their student home one day.
They're just going to snoop and spy on her.
Not creepy at all.
Well, and not even follow her home, but make this elaborate plan to get there before her. And so, like, watch her go in and stuff. And that'd be a little weird if your teacher did that these days. A
little creepy.
But so the teachers know that she lives with her grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea is they kind of want to talk to the grandfather, if you will.
Yeah, just to check out.
But of course, they show up to this junkyard and there's no house there.
Nope.
There's just this police box. Long story short, they end up getting...
I mean, they do end up talking to the doctor. And he's a jerk. He was gruff.
Yeah, he's pretty grumpy.
He's not pleasant. He's not a nice guy. And it's like, oh, you're going to call the police? Fine, go ahead and then explain to them what's going on. Because there's clearly no girl here. In the meantime, grandfather, come on in. I go, whoops, Susan, you blew the cover.
You know, it's actually interesting that you talk about him being so grumpy, and William Hartnell's doctor is quite grumpy, which is why I found it hilariously perfect that when BBC made a documentary basically about William Hartnell's time as the doctor.
Yeah, it's like a docudrama, an adventure in space and time.
Right. They used a certain actor known for being a grumpy custodian at a certain magic school, being Sir Walter Frey, the grumpy father of way too many children in Game of Thrones. They definitely picked an actor that is known for his grumpiness, so I don't think you're off base at all with Hartnell's grumpy doctor.
He's very grumpy, and when they all end up in the TARDIS together, it almost feels like he's not going to let them leave. So, you can't go now.
How 60s does that TARDIS feel?
I love it.
Hexagons all over the wall and white.
I love it.
Mid-century mod. You know.
I love it.
Each doctor's TARDIS, now you haven't seen this yet,
is unique
to them.
I knew that. I knew the TARDIS.
And so, you know, Hartnell, very clean, mm-hmm. very kind of 60s mod style and all of that. We start getting into the 1970s and you get more of...
There better be a lava lamp in my future.
I believe there's shag carpet.
Nice!
Now, you've seen the inside of the TARDIS as in the control room, the room they fly from, but what you may not have realized yet is that there are many, many, many rooms in the TARDIS.
Well, I would imagine he's got somewhere, because at this point, we're still being told they're kind of human. We're not told they're aliens. It's got to be a place to sleep.
You know, there's bedrooms, there's kitchens, there's a library with a swimming pool. There's all kinds of stuff in the, in the TARDIS, and pretty much everything you would need. For example, we'll see in episodes characters disappear deeper into the TARDIS and come back in costume that's appropriate for the time period they're in, or come back with something to eat. That didn't really happen this first one because it was just a quick little jaunt in the TARDIS, but we'll see more of that develop and you'll get to see more of the personality of each doctor as you explore their TARDIS and everything. Mm-hmm. David Tennant's is just a freaking mess. It's just chaos. It's one of my favorite, but good Lord, it looks like an episode of Hoarders.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get there.
So, the teachers enter the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
They are amazed because, of course, it's much bigger on the inside of, as we've said. And what they don't realize at first is that buttons have been pushed, things are moving, and engines are working. And suddenly, they've been transported.
They are way back in time, and we're hanging out with some cavemen with unibrows and pageboy haircuts and. I did appreciate they did mess up some of their teeth. I did appreciate
that. I appreciated that. And although they seem to have used all of the wigs from Hamlet or Richard III, they did try to muss them up a little bit. I think in some cases and they did better than others. I think I would have actually had them put the wig on backwards in some cases.
Oh, yeah.
But it was quite funny having Scottish cavemen.
So you made a comment about how the TARDIS has a universal translator, and that's why they can all understand each other.
Very similar to what you have in Star Trek.
Very similar to what we have in Star Trek. And I know it would make for difficult television, especially in the 60s, but the TARDIS hadn't been... I don't know if that was enough to justify them all speaking English to me. Because it's not like they were close to the TARDIS. It's not like anybody was... I don't know. That's... That seemed like a stretch, but it's one of those things you just have to accept, I think. And I
yeah, it's. I mean, there are in later series there are more elaborate scientific explanations of the phenomena, and we do see it when characters have been away for a while, like not traveling with the Doctor, and then they come back and travel again. They have lost that ability and have to like regain it over a little bit of time. But yeah, I do find it interesting, not that the Doctor and Susan can understand them, but that the teachers who were inside for such a short time seem to be able to understand the cave people.
That, and there were a lot of scenes with just the cave people before they had any interaction with anybody else anyway. And
yeah.
Obviously, as an audience, we need to be able to understand them complaining about not being able to make fire. I get it. But... I don't know. Maybe I'm asking a little much from a low-budget BBC show from the 60s.
Well, and I've seen interviews with some of the early crew and cast and different things, and they've even talked about the fact that they discussed, should we have aliens speaking alien and subtitle it? But at the time, it really was meant for smaller kids.
Yeah.
And... as opposed to now, when I think most kids are reading to some level in kindergarten, reading comprehension for smaller kids was just not as high back then because they didn't teach it as early in schools. And so I think they had to make a choice, you know, we need this to be viewable for kids. So we're just going to go with it.
Well, classic Trek did it too. You know, there's scenes on the Romulan Bird of Prey where they're just talking back and forth, and there's nobody from the Federation nearby, so there's no universal translator. Yeah, they're speaking English so that we can understand them. So I get it. As an audience member, we need to be able to understand. It didn't take me out of it, though. But there's this whole thing going on with the cavemen. Somebody who made fire died and took the secret of making fire to his grave, and everybody else is trying to make fire.
And now there's a power struggle for who's going to lead the tribe, and whoever can get fire could lead the tribe.
Except there's one woman who doesn't want them to make fire because she fears what fire is going to bring them or do to them. And there seems to be this context about fear of change or advancement kind of going on there as well. Of course, our guys, Doctor Who and company, they can make fire. He smokes a pipe.
Yes.
So he's offering to help make fire if they just let him go after they get captured. The first episode we watched was episode 3, and then we went back and rewatched The Cave of Skulls. And that was great, man. All these skulls sitting around, and it felt kind of creepy. There's one shot. I swear they put the camera in the skull head or behind the...
I think you're right. Yeah. I think it was coming through the opening, yeah.
Through the eye, through the orbital eye hole. It looked great. It just the production value for what they had, I think, really, really worked. You know, it did seem to drag just a little bit sometimes. I've seen some complaints or criticisms of the show that the first episode is really good, and then the last 3 episodes of this particular story is just everybody running around in the forest. It might have been able to be tightened up just a little bit because they get out, then they get back in the cave, and then they get out again. Like, but they're 25-minute long episodes, so...
You can only do so much.
You can only do so much, and it's not like we're stuck there for too long. But I enjoyed what we saw. They do eventually get out.
They do. And I think it's important to remember that these first 2 story arcs for the Doctor, the one we've watched now and then the next one that we're going to watch for next week, the first was meant to represent the fact that the TARDIS could move in time.
Okay.
So we're still on Earth. We're just...
Yeah.
Way, 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 way back.
And they never quite say that, but that's the... I think we understood that.
They're human. The cave people are humans.
Yeah.
It's implied.
It's early Homo sapiens.
So we have time, and now in the next arc, we're going to explore space.
Yeah.
And not that the TARDIS can't explore both time and space. It absolutely can. And there will be episodes in the future where we've gone somewhere in space and then we're bopping around in time but staying in the same location. That absolutely happens. But I think it was important for them with these first two arcs to make it clear. We can travel in time. We can travel in space. And you, as the audience, are discovering all of this along with Susan's two teachers who have come along for the ride and are therefore the Doctor's companions. I personally don't count Susan as a companion because she's his granddaughter. Right.
Which I'm worried about because I know modern Who doesn't have a granddaughter, right? Which means something happened to Susan at some point, and I can't imagine the BBC is like, let's kill the teenager.
There is a tendency, for the most part, when the Doctor regenerates, the new Doctor tends to acquire new companions.
Right.
That's not always the case, but quite often when a Doctor regenerates, then his current companions are retired. They go back to their lives. Remembering, of course, that the Doctor can take you. You can go on an adventure for 2 years and come back to the exact moment you left. And other than the fact that you look a little different and your hair's way longer, who's going to know? They're not necessarily going to know. And so, although one of my very favorite characters, who is not really a companion, does figure that out about his loved ones at some point. So well, that's still to come. And there's just so many great surprises. I'm just so excited for you to get to see everything and witness everything. I did want to touch on one of the really important things that happens in this episode with the cave people is the Doctor shows his humanity. And, you know, they have a point where one of the cave people gets injured.
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor could totally escape with his companions, and the cave person would probably die. And yet, he tries to save them. Both the humans and then his human companions and him are trying to save this person, and that makes an impression on the other cave people that, you know, you're not just out for yourself. You have to help others and what's best for everyone. And I think that's something that's really important. The Doctor is typically there to help. That's his whole thing. He wants to help. And he likes humans the best. Humans and Earth are under his protection.
So he's like Q, where they're like humans the best.
Yeah, but less malevolent.
Okay.
If you will, you know, less.
No, he came across pretty rough, man.
I'm
sure he'll soften up a little bit.
He's not always nice, but he's always kind.
Okay. All right.
That's what I'll say on it. Now, I know the cave people, they're pretty good-looking cave people.
They were.
Other than the tighty-whities that made appearances a few times. Honestly, on the dudes, I'm not sure what's with the up loincloth shots of the dudes, but that'd be the term, up loincloth? Is that?
Sure.
It's not a skirt, right? But the costuming was pretty good. I thought the set was done really well for the caves. They looked like caves and stuff.
You could see seams every once in a while. It's like, you know, if this was a different show, that's where the secret entrance would be, you know, the seaming in the wall. But no, I thought the production was fine. I found it interesting that that's the direction they decided to go, that if they're making a science fiction show, we're going to go back in time to the cave people. And maybe it was because it was an easier thing to do. I would have gone either future to indicate sci-fi or something with aliens to indicate sci-fi instead of cave people to indicate sci-fi.
Well, and that is where we're going to go next.
That is where we're going next. And I'm very excited about that. I know it's the first appearance of the Daleks. It's also the first time Terry Nation works on the show. Mm-hmm. And Terry Nation is a name that I did know from before as well.
Oh.
Terry Nation is a BBC writer, and in my previous generation as a podcaster, before I regenerated as the MKR guy, is that what they call it? The previous generation?
Sure.
Previous version? Whatever. Incarnation. That's the word. My previous incarnation as a podcaster, we did take a look at the BBC miniseries Survivors.
Okay.
Which is really good. It was redone in the 2000s, and that's the show that we covered on Mail Order Zombie. but it's a post-apocalyptic show. And my ex loves post-apocalyptic shows. I did watch a couple of episodes of the original Survivors, which Terry Nation was involved with. I thought it was really, really good. I'd like to go back and revisit it someday. But I also know that he did a lot of other projects as well, sci-fi for the BBC. And like I said, created the Daleks. And I'm excited to see the first appearance of the Daleks and what happens with them. Is this going to be the first time they meet the Daleks as well? Or does Doctor Who know who the Daleks are?
Oh, the Doctor knows who the Daleks are. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay, then don't. Don't. I know while we're watching this, and we're doing the same thing with another show that I've already seen that you're watching for the first time, one of us will ask a question that would explain what's going on.
Sure, sure.
That does get answered later. So whenever you ask me about something in the show that we're watching, I try not to answer it. And even though I'm asking you, don't answer it. I don't want to be too spoiled.
Okay, fair enough. I guess what I'll say is not just the Doctor, but all of his kind have a special relationship with all of the Dalek kind.
Okay. And at this point, I believe the Daleks were just thought to be robots. I believe I've been told by a listener of the show years ago that the Daleks actually have people inside them or little aliens inside them controlling them. So they're not quite robots. But at this point, you know what? I'm going to try to stop speculating. I just want to enjoy
them. I'd say go ahead and let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's a 7-episode arc. So it's going to take us a couple days probably to get through it. But we start with the dead planet.
Yep.
And we'll go from there. I think you're going to find a lot of the answers you're looking for. And I wouldn't want to have any spoilers for them. So.
But go to Tubi TV and watch some Classic Who. I think you're going to find something there. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to 60s BBC monster design. I've seen paintings by like Mark Maddox when he's done.
Get out your egg beaters.
Yeah. But I've seen like Mark Maddox work on Mad Scientist magazine, for example. He did a cover of some Doctor Who aliens. And you know, I've seen art from newer stuff. I'm just eager to see it on screen. I want to see what the BBC can do.
You know, and I think that one of the things that I think is incredibly impressive is that we are, what, 60 years on now?
Sure, yeah.
60 years on from original Doctor Who. Yeah, still 60 years on because the Daleks, actually, yeah, that arc wrapped up in February of 1964, so we're right at about 60 years. For all the hundreds or even thousands of episodes, for all the decades, for all the other monsters and aliens and things throughout time that have come up, the Daleks have changed really little since that original design is primarily their design. Now we've learned more about them. As you said, we're going to find out what's inside a Dalek eventually. But the outside design has remained, I'd say, 95% the same. Might get a paint job, but the design is the same, even to this day. And I think that really says something, that they were able to cobble together a monster out of stuff left over in the back room. And that is exactly what the Daleks are. They are a cobbled together monster. And make it look so convincing and vaguely threatening. It's kind of funny because they look a little goofy, but there's this edge to them that is just a little creepy, you know?
If a box on wheels wielding what looks like a plunger came after me, I wouldn't be scared. So I'm eager to see the Daleks in action.
Yeah, you have to see them in action, and it's the whole package, including the sound and everything. Before we get going and head off to watch some Daleks, what did you think of the sound?
What do you mean?
Well, you made a comment that you really liked that they've kept the theme essentially the same.
The music?
All the way back.
It was great.
Now.
There wasn't really a lot of music throughout the show, was there?
Did you not notice sound effects?
Well, I noticed sound effects. Facts, you know, some of it did sound like they were walking around in a soundstage.
Okay, I was going to say, I noticed that too, a little bit.
But it also had that weird sci-fi planet atmosphere.
And of course, the theme song is played on the...
Oh, was it a theremin?
A theremin. And one thing we can look at as we move forward in seasons, not only have they kept that, but fans have been involved. There have been times in the show's history where fans have helped with creating the opening sequence, whether that both the sound and the visual effects and stuff. And Doctor Who really has always been about the fans. From the very first Doctor, from Hartnell, he was kind of famous for walking around his town, and little kids would just jump in behind him in a line and start following him around because he was the Doctor, and they wanted to go on an adventure with the Doctor. And so he'd walk them through the park, and they'd have adventures there in the park and stuff. He'd have a stick that was his sonic screwdriver or something. You know, this was a man who really loved children and wanted to make something great for them and something that would last. And he and the whole team at the BBC, from Anthony Coburn to Verity, to every Doctor actor, villain actor, companion actor, Prime Minister, because have there been a lot of them on the show? I mean, in real life too, but on the show. They've all come together to create something really special that has become an ingrained part of the British people's identity and their media identity. In the way that I think Star Trek has for us here in America. And so I think it's a really neat peek into the lives of everyday British people from post-World War II up until now. And you see a lot of the issues that they tackle, a lot of the topics that they go over have to do with things that happened in real life. And, you know, they handle hard topics like death and tragedy and injury and even to the current Doctor, whose companion is a trans woman. And so dealing with all of that and with the pressures that regular everyday people face in society, and kind of using aliens or time travel or these great giant science fiction settings to take us out of our everyday world and be able to look at the problem from a unique point of view and with less personal pressure. And I think for a lot of people, it, you know, it's been a very therapeutic thing to watch and go through. You see the Doctor deal with death of someone that he loves, and it kind of gives you that feeling like, oh, we are all the same. You know, even this two-hearted alien from another world and time understands how I'm feeling, and I can take some comfort in that. And for me, that's been, especially with New Who, that's been what I've loved most about it, that it's a comfort show for me. There are episodes that I can go back and watch, and I know it's going to be weeks to months, maybe even a year or two before we get there, but oh, my absolute favorite episode is Vincent, and the Doctor and one of his companions go and meet and visit Vincent Van Gogh, and it's really special. And I think most fans have at least one episode in the Whoniverse that they'll say that this is it for me. This is the one that touches my heart, that can make me cry but make me smile, that I can go to if I've had a horrible, just awful, bloody terrible day. and it's like being wrapped in a warm hug or maybe a TARDIS. Yeah, I think that's what great TV and great science fiction, you know, should really all be about, is giving people those experiences. So I'm really excited to take you along on this Who Train adventure, and can't wait to watch you watch the next set.
Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you for sharing posts, retweeting posts, reposting episode updates, and reviewing this show and all the other stuff that you're supposed to do for your favorite podcast, whether we're your favorite podcast or not. I just appreciate all the support that you've always given us over the 10 plus years that we've been doing this here podcast. Monster Kid Radio means a lot to me. Knowing that y'all dig it as much as I enjoy putting it together makes it so much more worth it for me. And I'm super excited that I finally get to begin my journey into the history, the fandom, the phenomenon that is Doctor Who. And as Beth and I talked, next week we're doing more Doctor Who. We're going to take a look at the next story arc, which is several more episodes than what we've already seen. I think it's a 7-episode run, if I remember correctly from our conversation. And we're going to talk about the Daleks. I can't wait to get into it, man. I am so excited to talk about the Daleks with Beth after we watch it. Probably going to load up the Doctor Who episode sometime this weekend and dive in. So that should be a good time. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, I got to say thank you to Beth for being gentle as she took me to Whoville and we explored the emptiness. So I'm not going to make that joke anymore. Whoville. Okay, that's the last time I'm going to say it, I promise. Anyway, I got to say thanks to her for holding my hand, especially since I screwed up the orders of the episodes that we were watching to begin with, starting with episode 3 instead of episode 1. That shouldn't happen as we dive into the Daleks next week here on the show. If you want to know anything about the podcast, like I said at the top of the show, go to monsterkidradio.net. Everything is there. Links to our Facebook page, group, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, and Reddit. It's all there. I want to talk about the Patreon real quick because sometime this month, you're going to get something special. If you are a patron of Monster Kid Radio, any level, you're going to get an exclusive to the Patreon review by Beth and I of the new movie Monster Mash from the Asylum, starring Michael Madsen, of all people, as a Dr. Frankenstein. This could either be one of the stupidest things ever or one of the most enjoyable things ever. Either way, I'm excited to watch it, and I know a handful of you have already seen it and have reached out to me on Facebook to talk about it. Well, Beth and I are going to create a video review for it, and you'll be able to see it exclusively as a patron over at patreon.com/monsterkidradio. Again, of any tiered level, starting at like $1, anybody at $1 or higher will get to see that review. So come join us over there. We're going to be redoing all the rewards over there anyway. I'm going to streamline things even more. And I'd like to do more video reviews anyway. Check that out. Of course, like I said, we've got the Discord and the Reddit as well. We're not very active there either, but if you are a Discordian or Redditor, feel free to get on there and start up some conversations. Start up some conversations with us here by getting a hold of us. You can email me at monsterkidradio@gmail.com, or you can call the voicemail line. I'll have Beth read that number off again here in a moment. Let us know what your favorite Doctor Who episode is. Beth told you it was Vincent. I want to know what y'all's are, and we'll talk about it on a future episode of MKR.
You can email the podcast at monsterkidradio@gmail.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail at 360-524-2484.
We are counting down to the event at the Hollywood Theater where Monster Kid Radio is going to crash the theater for a screening of Dawn of the Dead, the 2:30 screening on Sunday, April 14th. I'm in a zombie mood. I'm looking forward to this quite a bit. It's been fun to see so many people talking about Dawn of the Dead on Facebook in certain communities, as well as on our own Facebook group page. Matt Rashley, for example, who was here last week, by the way, lots of people complimented on that episode. That was all Matt's idea, so big props to Matt. He's been going through and watching a lot of other zombie movies to get ready for Dawn of the Dead, and I just saw him post about I Walked with a Zombie. How cool is that? As well as Plague of the Zombies. How cool is that?
Oh my gosh, Derek, what's that you're wearing? That's a neat looking zombie shirt.
Totally not planned at all. To celebrate the Dawn of the Dead crash, we are actually selling a Dawn of the Dead Hawaiian style t-shirt. Okay, I say Hawaiian style, it's a button-up t-shirt. But if you've seen any of the Hawaiian style shirts that we sell, if you've bought one in the past, you know the quality. Same quality shirt, except this one celebrates Dawn of the Dead. You're going to recognize the image as soon as you see it because it's from the movie poster. It's that zombie head picture. It's wonderful. You can get it for $40 by going to teamdeath.com and then going to the Death Designs page from there, or follow the link in the show notes and you can pick one up for yourself. I do have to tell you that if you ordered one right now, you're not going to get it in time by April 14th's crash when we go see Dawn of the Dead, but you'll be able to get it and wear it anytime you watch Dawn of the Dead or any zombie movie or just whatever. I mean, where to sleep in, I don't care. Do whatever you want. I'm not the boss of you. I told you that at the top of the show. Thank you to Beth for that totally not awkward and not scripted at all ad placement opportunity.
It's all right.
So that's what's coming up here. And again, like I said, I've been really enjoying all the zombie movie talk that's happening online. Matt's had some ideas for some other episodes as well, because he's just now discovering some Val Lewton. So I think we're going to see some Val Lewton conversation coming up here in the future. I know Beth has made comments about watching Cat People and talking about it here on the show. I know we've talked about Cat People in the past, but it's been a long time. I'd like to revisit it, and maybe we'll even watch the kind of sort of sequel together too, and we'll talk about that as well. Plus, since Beth's in the room, and you know, I kind of want her to hear this as well, I'm excited about some of the ideas that she's had for Monster Kid Radio. There's a new movie coming out here soon called Abigail that some reviewers and press have likened to Dracula's Daughter. I personally don't see it, but what a perfect opportunity to watch Dracula's Daughter again and talk about it on the show, as well as talk about Abigail. I think Beth will be on board for that too. Plus, Matt pointed out, frankly, we're seeing a lot of Frankenstein stuff in the mainstream movie media, with Poor Things winning some Oscars. We got Lisa Frankenstein coming out. We got Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein movie coming up. So there's some more Frankenstein stuff happening. I'm excited about the future of Monster Kid Radio. We got some Dracula stuff. We got vampires. We got Frankenstein. And we got zombies. We got Val Lewton coming up. And yeah, I think definitely next month we're going to be doing some Luchador films. Lucha de Mayo might be coming back in full. It's going to be a lot of fun here. Plus, I told you at the top of this that I wanted to talk about the Mail Order Zombie Journal. I had some people ask me about this. This is the first issue. There is no other issue to send you as like a sample, unfortunately, to show you what I'm looking for. But I can tell you that even though I'm going back to an old brand or a previous regeneration or generation or incarnation of what I used to do, we're going to keep the Monster Kid Radio mindset in that we're celebrating zombie media. We're not going to have traditional movie reviews in the journal, because I don't want to be negative. I want to be positive about the zombie stuff that we love and why we love it. Doesn't mean we can't be critical, but we're not going to do what I used to do back on the Mail Order Zombie podcast, where I would talk about terrible zombie movies and give them ratings of 1 headshot out of 5. Yes, I still have the headshot sound effect on a hard drive. But yeah, we're not going to be overly negative. We're going to be celebrating the zombie movies that we love, and I'm really excited about some of the material that has been pitched to me. And if you are interested in contributing to the Mail Order Zombie Journal, again, drop me a line, monsterkidradio@gmail.com. Can't pay you anything, but I will give you ad space for a project of your own. If you're a podcaster or an author, you have a blog or a website or an event coming up, I'll give you ad space, I'll give you a copy of the journal, you get the byline, you keep all the credit, you keep the rights. We just put together a really cool magazine together.
Hey there, Monster Kids. If you want to meet Derek and Beth in person, and you happen to be in the Portland area tonight, come on down Friday night to the Old Church and join us for Tesla City Stories. It's going to be a great live, old-timey radio show performance with live Foley effects. Oh, man, it's going to be a killer time. This is their season opener, 10-year anniversary, and Team Death's going to join them. So come on down to the Old Church in Portland tonight and hang out with us.
Yeah, this episode will be going out in time for that. So if you're in the area, we'd love to see you. You'll see the tallest guy in the room who looks like he's having the most fun in the room with the cutest, hottest wife standing next to him. That's Beth I'm referring to. Anyway, you knew that. She knew that. I knew that. I also know it's time to wrap up the show, because now I'm just kind of sputtering and spitting out. So,
Monster Kid Radio is a Team Death production. All original content of Monster Kid Radio is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 Unported license. You can learn more about Team Death, our other projects like Death Designs, Mail Order Zombie, Monster Kid Writer, and more at www.teamdeath.com. Remember, death is spelled D-E-T-H. That's teamdeath.com. Please rate and review Monster Kid Radio wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
The song La Talaraña is copyright 2023. The i5. You can find them at thei5.bandcamp.com. This song is from their EP release, Creature Crawl. They are a surf band based out of Eugene, Oregon. Check out this EP as well as their other EP releases. When you're done listening here, sign out. go over to Bandcamp, pick up the albums, and let them know that you heard about them here on Monster Kid Radio. My name is Derek M. Cook. I'll talk to everybody next week. Ciao.